Welcome to the Gut Goddess Show, your weekly podcast to help you create one happier, flatter, and more joyful belly in life. I'm your host, Kezia Hall. I'm a nutrition and functional medicine geek and practitioner and a lover of all things blankets because I live in Scotland and it's freezing. But let's get the show started, lovely. So this week on the show, I've got something awesome for you guys. What we're going to be doing is we're going to be talking about core beliefs, what they are, how they impact what you eat and what you think about your body, and what on earth you can do to begin to shift them and why it's actually so much simpler than you think. It honestly is. Often when we think about like shifting mindset or words like core belief or, you know, whatever it is, we can often be a bit like, oh my gosh, this means I need to be in therapy or get loads of prayer or I need to like have some sort of, you know, in-depth experience for the next 5 years in order to shift things. And while in some cases that's true, for a lot of us, actually shifting our mindset and creating a healthy relationship with our food and our bodies actually comes from a few simple things that we can do every day. And the main thing we have to understand and do actually is to become aware and to become conscious of this internal dialogue, of this unconscious stream of thoughts and beliefs and values that we have. And I cannot tell you how important it is to be aware of this, especially if we're looking to make sustainable, lasting changes in our life and in our health. You know, if you're just looking for a quick fix and a 2-week solution to something, then, you know, you can just find a formula, follow a plan, and that's fine. But if you're looking to create a lifestyle, if you're looking to create that healthy life that actually feels effortless, that actually feels joyful and peaceful and powerful and fun, which is available to you 100%, because I know I've created it for myself and for clients. If you want that, then actually we need to become aware of these things that are core beliefs that are driving our behaviors and are driving the things that we do. So I can't tell you how often I've worked with clients that have ended up that have talked to me, they come to me, they maybe come to my Nourished community or work with me one-on-one and they're just kind of stuck and maybe for 5 years, 6 years, 10 years, 15 years in these kind of vicious cycles of wanting to change, trying to change, it not working, feeling like a failure. So they try another formula, another plan, another diet, another strategy, another label. It works for a while, then it stops working. All their results, you know, all their weight that they've maybe lost comes back on, the health issues come back, they feel like a failure. They try something new. Can you hear this dieting hamster wheel that goes on? And that is really toxic. It actually can harm your body physically, especially if you're dieting metabolically. It can leave you with lasting issues that I still sometimes have to deal with clients. But also from a mindset point of view, there's nothing more frustrating than knowing what you want and not being able to get there. Knowing you want to be healthy, knowing you want to eat beautiful, whole, real foods, knowing you want to heal your body through nutrition, knowing you want to prevent future diseases like diabetes and cancers and cardiovascular disease through healthy lifestyle choices, knowing you want all this stuff, but not actually being able to take the actions that make it happen. That is incredibly frustrating. And so I've got a guest on today, Megan. She's an amazing business mindset strategist and she really focuses all her work around core beliefs. She's based in Ottawa in Canada, and she's been working within this area of core beliefs for over 16 years. And what we have is an amazing conversation together where we talk about different things like how to become your own authority, you know, the fact that beliefs come before our emotions do. That actually a lot of what we need to grow in is being comfortable with our own power and so, so much more, as well as sharing so many practical things of how you can shift your beliefs and how to grow an awareness of them. So If you're looking to create an effortlessly healthy life and to get out of that hamster wheel of feeling like a big fat loser or like you can't eat healthy or whatever it is, then this is the episode for you. Dive on in. Let me know what you think of it. Any questions you have over on Facebook at Supernaturally Healthy or on Instagram, you can private message me there. Leave a comment on one of my posts again at Supernaturally Healthy. And I would love to hear your comments with this. Otherwise, enjoy this fabulous episode with Megan O'Neill, the Mindset Business Strategist. Bye. Welcome, Megan, to the podcast and to the show. I'm so excited that you're here.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Well, everyone by now listening, I have gone through a little bit of the formal, you know, bio of who you are, but tell us a little bit in your own words of your story and your process to kind of getting where you are today as a business mindset strategist and all of that sort of good stuff.
Thank you. My official title now is Business Mindset Strategist, but for many, many years, I called myself a Core Belief Engineering Practitioner.
That's a cool name as well.
Yeah. So as you can tell from the title, Core Beliefs is my jam. This is what I've been doing since 2002, I guess. Yeah, before Core Beliefs and Mindset was buzzy and trendy and that sort of thing. You know, I got into it in the end, I guess in my late 20s, for many different reasons. One of them was I started to understand the role of the subconscious because, you know, core beliefs are very subconscious and often we're not really aware of what our core beliefs are. I think that there's many, many different words for beliefs. And we can start to recognize them in our values, in our traditions. Like there's all these different words for beliefs. You know, it's a vast, vast subject. But I got into it for a couple reasons. I quit smoking in the end of the 90s. And that sort of a light bulb went on that my subconscious was a big part of why I quit, because I quit in one day. But it took me a year to get to the point to quit, because I had to really think about what were the consequences and what was I afraid of to quit.
Yeah.
And then that sort of sent me starting to, you know, investigate what the subconscious and beliefs, and I started to study things. And then I was in a serious relationship with my boyfriend, who's now my husband. And one of the things that kept coming up that was kind of knee jerk for me was that I was having a lot of trust issues with him.
Okay.
And this was a guy who didn't deserve for me to be, you know, throwing these suspicions on him. There was nothing that he did.
Yes.
But this related to my childhood, and this related to my parents' relationship. And so he said, you know what, you need to do something about this. And I really had this kind of epiphany, conscious moment where I realized that all the garbage that was coming out of my mouth was my story, and I needed to work on it. And so, interestingly enough, he had done this core belief engineering, this method called core belief engineering, and he kept raving about it. And he kept saying, Megan, I really think you should do it. But because, to be honest, because it was alternative and I grew up in a fairly traditional world, I was like, really? Anyway, at that point, the universe intervened literally that week. There was a letter that came to him saying, listen, we're doing a workshop. Do you want to come? And he's like, well, let's do it. So I went and did this workshop on core belief engineering, and I just really understood the power of beliefs from having listened to it. And what kind of triggered me was that one of the practitioners said, you know, do you have these like fantastic girlfriends who are attractive and they're smart, but they keep picking the same wrong guy again and again and again? And I was like, yeah, I have these amazing girlfriends. Like it doesn't make any sense because they're really, you know, they're really with it, these ladies. And she's like, well, there's a lot of subconscious beliefs that they have about relationships. And that just sort of clicked, like, what is the power of our subconscious? So I decided one day at work, as I was listening to this guy tell me his life story, and he was, you know, I sat there and listened to this guy for an hour. And I thought to myself, what am I doing here at work? Why don't I do something where I can help people? And I literally quit that day.
Oh, wow. And
I started my training in this alternative method called core belief engineering. And then that was it. that started, and you know, I ended up being this core belief engineering practitioner. And I'm from Toronto originally. And in Toronto, the first people who were attracted to working with me were entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I think entrepreneurs were attracted to me and my title, which was about core beliefs, is because entrepreneurs understand that your mind is really what creates the success in your business. They understand that your mind has a lot to do with you being successful.
Yes.
And they're tuned into it, right? And then also they're out of the box thinkers, you know? So yeah. Anyway, that became my focus over the years. I mean, I was generalist for many years, and then I was focused in on relationships mm-hmm. When I moved here to Ottawa, which is where I live now. But essentially, I always kept coming back to getting excited about entrepreneurs who walk through the door. And I would try and work with as many as I could, because I realized that was my, that's what I was attracted to, that type of creative, out of the box type of personality. So we were a good fit.
Yeah.
So that's my story.
Oh, I love it. And I think there's so much gold in already what you've said, because I think it's so true. If there anyone is listening to this who is wanting to start a business, runs a business, has dreams of setting up a business, mindset is one of the biggest things. And that was one of the biggest surprises, I do air quotes, of running my own business, was how much of it wasn't just like strategies, planning, business planning,
right,
knowledge, skills even. It was the beliefs that I had. But from for those of you listening but from a nutrition perspective as well, I've also been really surprised as when I work through issues with clients or in my community, how much it's a similar thing, like, you know, that example you gave of your girlfriends who are brilliant, beautiful, knowledgeable. I see it all the time with women that are, they know loads about food, they are intelligent, they are you know, they're really capable, strong women, but then they keep on doing these behaviors. They're stuck in a cycle of these behaviors that they don't want, and are the direct opposite of what they actually truly desire. And there's this kind of disconnect between their actions and their behaviors and their goals, desires, dreams, and they're totally confused of, why do I keep tripping myself up? Why am I stuck in this cycle of, maybe it's hating their own body, maybe it's binging loads on food, or, you know, whatever it is, which is why I think this whole topic is, the more I work with women, especially, and this does apply to men for sure, but when it comes to food and nutrition and body image, I think with women, so much of this stuff, if I just say, oh, well, take a supplement or eat more vegetables, like, that's not actually dealing with the problem at all, because it's really based and rooted in something core going on the inside that's and drives this behavior that is apparently the polar opposite of what they want, but they keep on doing it.
Yeah.
And I think when you're in that situation, which I know I was years ago, with quite a disordered approach to eating and my own body, as an intelligent woman, I was aware of what my behavior was, and I was aware of what I wanted and how they didn't match up, but I had no idea what to do about it, how to change it. I just thought I was failing.
Yeah. You know,
I just thought I was a failure, or something in my identity was somehow flawed, or my worth as a person, and that other people somehow had it. I don't know, God gave them something that meant they got it and could just do those things. So I think it is a really, really interesting thing. So where would you begin in terms of sort of becoming aware of what those core beliefs are?
Well, I mean, we all live in a dichotomy. I mean, there's different areas, right, that you have this dichotomy. It could be eating, it could be relationships, it could be anything. Whatever it is, where you feel like there is a yin and a yang, like, I know better.
Yeah.
And most of the things that people have said to me over the years is exactly what you just said, which is, I consciously, rationally, intellectually know I shouldn't be doing this, or I know I shouldn't feel this way, but yet I do. And so what I'm always trying to start with in terms of recognizing beliefs is Looking at the language even that you use, because should indicates there's a belief. So in the area where you're feeling, you're not feeling powerful, you're feeling kind of lost, you're feeling like, I don't really know what I'm doing. This is where you have to dig down deeper on your beliefs. And, you know, when we talk about core beliefs from the point of view of a core belief, say, for example, my training, core belief engineering, what we sort of explain it as is that big parts of ourselves. So imagine that we have all these different parts of our mind, and these different parts of our mind develop in different areas. So I have my mom part, I have my wife part, I have my friend part, I have my professional part, and these all keep going in and out of your subconscious, keeps coming in and out of your conscious mind. And a lot of the beliefs that you develop for each part of yourself, the big parts, like for example, the parts that have a relationship with food or your body or your relationship with people, they develop at a really young age. And, you know, I think science is showing this to be true, that many of our big beliefs are developed between the ages of, you know, when you come into this world and say seven. And we collect these beliefs mostly from our parents or our family, whomever brings us up. And we, when we're a little kid, if you imagine being a little kid and you're listening to mom and dad, or you're listening to granny or whomever, you think what they say is the truth, and you take that on as your belief. And so when you start to look in the area of food, now, if you talk to my husband, Kevin, he had a gloriously nurturing German Oma. And when he used to go over to Oma's house, Oma would have this beautiful spread, and she was so loving. And so for him, he associates that type of eating with love.
Yeah.
And so we have a lot of these beliefs and associations. The associations create the beliefs, right? So it's about really becoming aware of what you believe. For example, if you were to say to me, you know, Megan, you're not allowed to eat that. Or I say to you, oh, you know what? I'm not allowed to eat that. What do you believe about eating that or not eating that? What do you believe? So it's always the kind of questioning process of, what do I believe about this? And letting those beliefs just come up instead of editing ourselves of what we think we should believe. Because if you let whatever comes up, then that's what's natural to you. And then you can actually work on it. But if you keep, and this is one of the things that's been interesting about working with people over the years, is I would say, okay, so what do you believe on that? And then you could just see their sort of analyze or rationalize or come up, and they would say what they think that they were supposed to say. And I'd always say to them, listen, take the editor away. Just tell me from the gut, from whatever comes up, tell me what you believe about the situation, and just let that honest truth come up. So, you know, when you're looking at your beliefs, look at some of the shoulds, look at some of the ways in which you operate, and ask yourself, what do I believe about that?
Yeah. If I'd asked myself that question 12 years ago, I think I would have, you know, in terms of my relationship with food, would have, the beliefs I would have that if I ate certain foods, then I was a better person, a thinner person, even instantly, eating spinach doesn't make you instantly thinner. And if I ate certain, and a belief that other foods made me a failure and made me like somehow flawed innately, because there was a lot of identity wrapped up in food. And also another belief probably that I'm never going to be able to eat healthy. You know, I'm never going to be able to give up sugar, for example. I've eaten sugar since day one. You know, I'm never going to be able to change that. But I wasn't necessarily aware of those beliefs at the time. But actually, it's so true. Actually, we do have real core beliefs attached to, or even, you know, same with body image as well. People, I've chatted to clients that, you know, can't look at themselves naked, won't look at certain body parts. Exactly. Will only speak unkindly about, you know, their arms, their thigh, whatever, you know, even feet, toes, everyone can have something that they don't like, but they never think, what am I believing about looking at myself naked? Or what am I believing about my thighs, whether they're big, small, scarred,
And it's often their mom. Well, this is not a blame the mom thing, but mm-hmm. I was just thinking about my friend the other day. She was talking about her and her sister and their different body types. And she was talking about how her mother would say to her as a teen, well, don't wear shorts. Don't wear shorts. Mm-hmm. And I said, what do you mean don't wear shorts? Like, she said, well, because we don't have good legs. And so you shouldn't show your legs because you don't have good legs. And it's those messages. And I think we all sort of have a clue. And God bless parents. It's not as though intentionally trying to plant these negative beliefs in our head. It's just that you do what you know, and that's it. And so, you know, I don't know what you think about this, but it was really interesting is that when I was growing up, I heard the same messages around food, but I was just thinking about how my parents, they certainly cooked a lot. My dad owned a couple of restaurants. I had kind of a lot of food in my life. But one thing that was interesting is I didn't have a lot of restriction on food, whereas my husband had a lot of restriction on any sort of sugar coming into his house. Yeah. And he used to, and I had an uncle who worked for Coke. So we had Coke cans. Like just everywhere. Everywhere. And, you know, I would drink it. But would you ever catch me with a Coke nowadays? No. And it's not because I go, oh gosh, you know, I mean, I know there's probably about 2 cups of sugar in it. I don't even desire it. So I've often wondered whether or not, you know, if it's too restrictive in terms of your eating, or if you say to a kid, like, don't go near that sugar, or don't, you know, does it then become kind of like a teenager who you say, don't go near booze or don't go near this, where it becomes, ooh, I think I'm going to go to town over that. Yeah. You know, so I've always kind of, even in my own sort of introduced things like not saying, oh, you can't have McDonald's or whatever, but sort of the moderation factor so that their beliefs are more balanced, right?
Yes.
I don't know.
That's huge. No, I think it is. Cause I think it depends on how you have grown up. So I've had friends who they've been encouraged to eat healthy foods ish growing up, but it's not been a big thing, you know, food in terms of food isn't a huge conversation actually in terms of it being good or bad. It's just food and, you know, they get a variety of it. And I think for me growing up, half of my childhood was pretty, you know, food was unrestricted in a way, but we ate very unhealthily because it was just that model that had been passed down from my grandma to my mum. And then, you know, economic circumstances means often sometimes, you know, you just end up eating more sugary things or processed things. Right. And then I started a diet club when I was 11. And so then that I kind of went from one extreme then to another. Of being like, food's just food, eat whatever. And then suddenly having this connection of like, oh, food is something that you need to think about. And some of that was helpful in that I didn't really eat vegetables or fruit before. And then this place was like, maybe eat some vegetables and fruit. It's a good idea. So that, you know, it wasn't all terrible, but it did bring in that restriction and that I think that's really when the obsession with food actually started, because it became a big issue and it became a very then noisy kind of relationship in my head that was constantly, you know, constantly in tension. Whereas food, I think, is fun and it's, you know, it can help build community and it's good to celebrate and, you know, it's even good to comfort with, but it's just not meant to be it's not meant to be a big noise. As I always describe it as like a noise in your head in terms of your relationship with it. It's kind of, it is what it is. It's not this huge emotional issue of food. But I think you're right. I think those core beliefs and the things that you pick up from your parents and you're right. Like my parents and my mom especially did an amazing job and the best job that she could, but she had those core beliefs from her mom. And then that got passed down to her. And then my mom was just carrying on with those. And now she's actually done a lot of work and actually changed her relationship with food completely, worked through those core beliefs herself, or she's done the amazing work. But when I was younger, that we were just carrying on the same patterns, the same behaviors, the same beliefs, totally unconsciously, completely unaware as a family that is what we were doing, which is really interesting.
And they didn't have the education. You know, I mean, really, when you think about the, you know, one of the things that I sort of think is lasting talking about food, I think one of the legacies that will be passed on is recipes. Like when you think about what's going to, like furniture goes and all these things that we inherit from our ancestors, that pretty well goes by the wayside. You know, but the beliefs are one thing that are carried on generation. I call them familial generational beliefs that I'm often working with. And, you know, recipes is another thing. I have recipes from my great grandmother that are still, you know, and so when you think about, when I think about my grandmother's education, and she was from, actually she was from Blackpool and, you know, probably in the old style of English, you know, food and boil the hell out of your vegetables.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Yes. And so, you know, my Nana, that's how she fed my mother. And then my mother turned around and fed that to me until probably the 80s when she started to, when she went back to work, she was a nurse and she started to, you know, understand nutrition in a more modern sense. But even in the 80s, by the way, in the 90s, they were poo-pooing any sort of fat.
So, like
everything that came into the house was non-fat. And talking about food beliefs, my mother would say, I can't believe you're putting cream in your coffee or you're putting butter on your toast. And I luckily ignored her because I was like, I don't even eat that much.
I know. See,
beliefs are always changing too about food and the dietary guidelines are changing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's sort of interesting, but most of the beliefs around body, I think we've done a pretty good job of starting to look at those beliefs around body. I think, you know, I think it's gotten better on some level and then maybe not so great on another. Like my daughter's 13 is being bombarded with images on social media that I never would have been bombarded. They didn't have commercials like that. And you had to go read a magazine in order to see some of the, you know, the stuff in my day. So, you know, this is where as a mother, I've had to really try and communicate healthy beliefs about body and healthy beliefs about eating, which is, you know, that can be tough, right? That can be tough in this modern age.
Yeah, it can. Especially with body image, I think there is, as you say, it's definitely getting better. Like my Instagram feed, for example, I mean, I do sort of curate it in that, you know, I ditch things that aren't helpful for me to see. But, you know, my feed is filled with women, lots of different beautiful women with different shapes and sizes and just different, very different bodies. And, you know, there's a diversity in that from your, you know, beautiful traditional supermodels to, you know, just tons of different skin colors and different. But that is something I've had to intentionally create that visual story for myself and influence for myself, because otherwise you do just see the same white, perfect, no scars, no, you know, no disabilities, no, nothing, a certain shape, certain size. You don't see cellulite, you don't see stretch marks, you don't see, and immediately if you're seeing ever. Like, is that what I should look like in my underwear or in a swimming costume? Because, you know, in my swimming costume, I can definitely see cellulite. I can, you know, in probably a year's time, I'll definitely have more stretch marks once this baby comes. I'll, you know, things, and we can't control life. So we're going to get scars. We're going to get, you know, all of those different things. And it's that visual image that does start to, that starts very young as well. I remember it starting in the playground because I was bullied a lot for being quote unquote fat when I was younger. Which I wasn't, but interestingly enough, I did become overweight because I was told I was. And so I believed that I was, so I behaved like I was, so I became overweight actually. And it was at the time, I had no idea that was happening, but it's only now in hindsight that I realized how influential the messages I got at the time of being younger. And that was, you know, I wasn't, you know, that was just in the playground. And so I think it is really important for people listening to think about what are the messages, even though it is getting better, what are the messages you're consistently getting and the messages you give to yourself as well, like every day, like, oh, you look rough, you know.
Absolutely.
Look in the mirror, like your ass is really fat and that, or whatever.
And you know, what happens is that when you receive these beliefs from, say, for example, the school ground, you know, when the kids on the play set are saying things to you, or you're in class and your teacher says something to you, that has a lot of influence on the way in what you believe. I mean, it has a huge influence. And then I guess, you know, sort of what I have tried to accomplish with my clients over the years that I accomplish with myself is becoming my own authority. So not giving my power away to other people's beliefs, because often the beliefs that you inherit or you assume are beliefs that don't really work for you, which is why they don't feel comfortable, you know. And I think it takes a bit of life experience too, and really looking at yourself to sort of realize, you know what, these beliefs don't work for me anymore. This whole concept of body image or nutrition or whatever it is, whatever area it is, they don't feel like me anymore. And that's when people start to really step into their own authority. And I think that when you start to unlayer your beliefs, and that's kind of the foundation of my work, is to help people really unlayer beliefs, because underneath all those beliefs is the real you. And whenever you're looking, whenever I'm beginning, say, for example, working with people and we're trying to determine what change is going to look like, people will often say that to me, you know what, Megan, I just want to really just become me. I just want to, so essentially become me, my own authority, live by what I want to live and how I want to feel, which seems pretty reasonable to me, you know? And I think that it's really about starting to, when you make the statement, like say, for example, when I was with my friend the other day and she said, I'm not feeling so hot, and, you know, stuff was going on with her emotionally. She had some anxiety and she said, you know, I just started to eat. And so she understood that she was eating as a result of how she was feeling. Mm. But then the journey is to dig down deeper on that, to not just go, okay, I eat, I feel crummy. You know, what is it that I believe about eating this food? What do I believe it's going to do for me? You know, and this is about getting into your, I mean, essentially emotions are the result of beliefs. Emotions don't come first, beliefs come first, and then emotions follow. Mm. So really in my experience, like beliefs are at the foundation of everything. They create thoughts, they create emotions, they create actions. So once you start to dig down deep and you go, okay, so this is what I believe about myself, because ultimately it is related, you know, from having worked with people over the years and your own experience, that all the nutrition and all the weight and all the whatever it is all related to us.
Yeah.
And how we feel about ourselves. And those are the messages that we got as kids. Like you said, if I eat this, so at this point in your life, when you were introduced to a new way of thinking, there was a part of you that there was something going on there that globbed on to the idea of nutrition being a solution for something. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is what we do in our life. This is what we do. It's not to do with directly what our parents have said to us. It could be that at every stage in our life, for all of the big actions that happen, we make a decision on a subconscious level. And often my work is digging around, what decision did you make at that time? Because when you make a decision, for example, to feel badly about yourself and you go, okay, well, I'm no longer going to wear shorts, or I'm no longer going to do this. The reason why people make those big decisions is because they think somehow it's going to benefit them and protect them. And whenever in the foundation of my work that I have found is that a lot of the negative beliefs that we still hold, we still keep them, even though we know we shouldn't have them, somehow there's a benefit to them.
Yeah.
So when you start to look at some of your beliefs, even though you might think to yourself, how could there possibly be, like, this is ridiculous, how could there be a benefit to having a negative belief or a negative feeling? There is. And most of the time it's about protecting yourself and keeping yourself safe. But the thing to realize is that, you know, I'm in my late 40s. I don't need to keep myself safe. There is nobody who pretty well can really hurt me in reality. Mm. You know, like there's not a lot of chance that, I'm not a little kid anymore, but a lot of times these parts of ourselves are kind of stuck in that story. And as we start to dig deeper on these beliefs and we start to go, wait a minute, that's not true anymore, that's not true for me now, then it heals a lot and it moves you forward into what you want in the present day.
No, I think that is so true, because it's one of those things that you find a lot with people when they're, you know, they'll have a belief about something. You know, I'll sometimes get with clients that I work with, they're doing really well in us working together and in and implementing the actions we talk about or the program that we put in, depending on, you know, what their goals are. And then they might just disappear off the radar for a couple of weeks. And so sometimes I'll just be like, hey, how are you getting on? You seem to have gone AWOL, what's happened? And then there's this whole story of, oh, well, I had a night out, or it was a birthday weekend, or we went away and I just ended up, you know, feeling basically sabotaging their own sort of progress and the habits that they've been making, and then staying in that kind of place, right, and actually needing to discuss through with them, like, what is the belief that's keeping them there and why? Because they're trying to keep themselves safe from something,
right,
and that there is some part of them unconsciously that feels threatened by the progress they're making, or feels somehow it would be unsafe to lose that weight or to try and ditch sugar, for example, because they've failed before and they can't, they emotionally can't take, the little girl inside them can't take another quote unquote failure, or another disappointment, or another another piece of evidence to prove that they can't do it. And it's, and I think when you can tap into those kind of layers, as you say, of what, and recognize that your behaviors often are you, there's often elements of them trying to protect you. And actually, as soon as you can then not judge them and be like, oh, I binge eat, I'm such a crap person for binge eating every Friday, or drinking too much wine, or whatever, you know, fill in the gap, I'm such a loser, I suck. Actually being like, okay, there's a part of me that does those things for a reason, and it does them to actually do me good. It think, you know, there's that child part of me that thinks it's doing me good. It's protecting me, it's saving me, it's defending me, it's whatever it is. And I found that really useful in a different context from working through having dealt with anxiety since a young child, actually having to learn with, you know, therapists and whatever, how to relate differently to emotions, to behaviors, because we naturally will always be like, I just ate sugar, so we judge that immediately. Or I just feel anxious, so we judge that as bad. Feeling anxious is bad. Feeling angry is bad. Feeling whatever it is. For me, it was always around anxiety. And that's been really liberating, even just in the last 18 months, of changing that dynamic, and that how I relate to my behaviors has been a huge thing. And I loved what you were saying as well about becoming your own authority on things. And I think you have to do that. Otherwise, you can spend your life following somebody else's formula, which is only, when a nutrition, from a nutritional point of view, is only going to take you so far. It might help a little bit, but it's never going to take you the full way, because it's listening to your own body, being your own authority, you know, figuring out what works for you. Because I've not had a client who where I've done exactly the same thing and had exactly the same results ever.
And you have to, in order to be your own authority, you have to accept your own power, right? You have to be comfortable with feeling powerful. And I think that, you know, when you look at that little childhood part, which we'll call, say, for example, the saboteur, we'll call it the little saboteur that thinks it's keeping you safe. The way in which I have found the best success is that when that little saboteur, the little kid that's still operating the way that it operates in order to protect you, and I say that quotation, air quotes, what that part of you doesn't understand is that you are safe, and that you do have the knowledge to live a life that works, that you do have the power to live a life that works for you, and you can make the choices, and you're not a little kid anymore who has to listen to mom or dad or teacher or brothers and sisters. And that's often what is at the bottom of all this stuff, is that that little saboteur is not aware of how with it and how accomplished you are. And it's about connecting those two that really gets the change, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. And I think it is really helpful hearing you say that, because you're like, oh yeah, a lot of my journey with this has been that process of being comfortable with how powerful I am, being kind of owning the value that I have, and therefore being able to become my own authority, being able to listen to my body and take what it says with and listen and actually listen, because there's that underlying value, which I think is really important and does underpin a lot of you know, a lot of our behaviors and actions.
Yeah.
In terms of if someone is starting to realize this process, you know, they were aware that their behaviors are, you know, they've grown in awareness of their behaviors. They've maybe started to ask these questions of, you know, what am I believing around this area, say relationship with food or sugar or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Where is a good place in terms of, or how would you recommend shifting those beliefs? Where would you begin with that?
Well, I think the first, I always say this to everybody, is you have to become aware of what you're running. So, you know, if I said to you, oh, and I just all of a sudden said a belief out of my mouth, and you said, oh, that's really interesting, Megan, your belief about food or whatever, and it just came out. I always ask people to, you know, really become conscious of what they're saying, what they believe. So writing it down, I think, visually to see what you believe, or talking to someone about what you believe, I think is really valuable, because you can hear it and you can see it. And yeah. Then the next step is to ask yourself, is that my belief? Is it my belief? Do I really believe that? Like, is that my mom's belief? Is that my dad's belief? Is that something that I inherited back when I was a teenager that doesn't really work anymore? It's outdated. Because most of the time our beliefs are really outdated. Most of the time they don't match who we are in the present. Yeah. So the more that you sort of dig down on your beliefs and sort of look at them and become aware of them, there is often spontaneous change just from doing that. And then, you know, for the bigger ones, the big stuff, you know, the ones that are really deep, deep, deep down, you know, I go outside of myself to get help for that. I don't think that a lot of times with bigger beliefs, because they're so a part of our identity, I think often you need help to really dig down deeper on some of those bigger beliefs, I'll be honest. But I think that often you can get change from really just looking at your beliefs and understanding what the origins are, and understanding that you don't need to own them anymore, that they're not yours. It's a bit like, I was comparing it to a bit like decluttering, like you're decluttering beliefs in order for you to start to merge in. It's a bit like getting rid of your parents' old furniture in order for you to buy new furniture. But you have to get rid of the old stuff first, and you have to make room, and then you have to get to know yourself and be really clear about what you want for yourself. And when I first work with my clients, the first thing that I'm really, you know, in my initial kind of work with them is going, okay, so what is change going to look for you? Like, what's it going to look like? Like, well, how are you going to feel? Because change can be daunting, as you know, from working with clients initially, unless you get really strong consciously. And I think listening to you and your journey, I mean, you got really conscious about what you wanted for yourself and what you believe. So therefore it's easy to go, okay, you know what? That doesn't work for me anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And I know for me, what that process that you've said of, you know, being aware of what you're running, aware of what you're saying, questioning, is that your belief? And then maybe getting outside help. That has completely been my process, actually, in terms of first it began with awareness and then really changing what I said, the words that I used about myself and about my food still is really important. You know, I can still spiral off onto, I call it the chasm of doom with clients, where you're just like, everything in life is pointless. Yes. Everything's depressing, whatever it is. And even like in the last, this year with being pregnant and feeling ill, I've had to be really aware, because often when I feel physically off, that's quite, can be a trigger for me. Yeah. So the health, you know, history with health issues, and being really aware of what I was saying about my body and saying about my health is still really important to this day. And it does get easier once you initially shift the gears or, you know, put in those new habits.
Yeah.
And also then also I've gone and gotten outside help with need, you know, with stuff that's maybe beliefs that are maybe rooted in more traumatic episodes in life, then I've gone to see, you know, your psychotherapists, and, you know, there's lots of different therapies that are really useful for dealing with beliefs that are actually rooted in trauma. And I think for a lot of the time, we often think people are just like, can you just tell me what to eat or whatever? But if you're in this cycle, if you're in a vicious cycle that you've been in, and lots of my clients have been in it for maybe 5, 10, 15 years of the same actions, the same behaviors, the same patterns around food and their body and making very little progress, then sometimes it is, you know, it's really worth going down this path and finding out what, you know, seeing what you discover and really dealing with it. But I think becoming conscious is part of, yeah, it is.
Yeah. Because, you know, when I have worked over the years with people who have struggled with their weight, losing weight, for example, they are almost professional in their knowledge of dieting, food, nutrition. I mean, they know it like the back of their hand. There's nothing that I wouldn't even spend time in that. They know it all. They could teach me a lot. But usually what has happened is that somewhere in their childhood, most of the time, teenagehood, something traumatic has happened. And interestingly enough, it might be something that you don't suspect or you don't remember, or, you know, it's deep down there. And it's something that you're running kind of like a little program, a little belief system that you're like, really? Like people have over the years have said to me, really, Megan, I cannot believe that I believe this at this deep level. I have done so much work on myself. And I'm like, I know. And in most of your areas of your life, you are rocking it, but there's this area that you just haven't got to yet that needs some cleanup and needs to be updated. And it is what it is. Everybody has it. Everybody's like this. This is just part of our evolution, in my opinion.
Mm. Yeah. No, I think that is really, really helpful in terms of moving forward. And a lot of what I do with people is look at how people can create healthy lives. So, yeah, you know, we can all do programs and 2-week, 3-week, 4-month things. And there's a place for those structures and, you know, resources, yeah, for sure. But in terms of actually helping people create lives that are healthier and more filled with joy and, yeah, you know, just all round well-being that, yeah, actually sticks and isn't, yeah, constant self-flagellating, self-sabotaging, yeah, I'm, yeah, such a failure drama. It's just a drama around food, which is exhausting, actually. I think if that is a goal, then becoming aware and becoming conscious of your beliefs and your core beliefs and being and doing stuff about it is really important. And it doesn't mean you have to, I think sometimes people think it's like a, it can take, you know, a mindset shift and awareness shift in terms of your mind. But actually, practically speaking, it can be the things that you say. It can, yeah, be the words, absolutely, that you use. It can, yeah, be the way that you phrase yourself. I remember I used to always write on my mirrors in my early 20s. Around, you know, just nice things about my body. I would say things out loud. I would journal stuff. I would journal out all the crap and then often replace it, you know, with new thoughts. I wouldn't let my friends speak crap about themselves, yeah, or in their body of like, oh, I look so fat in this, or I'm such blah, blah, blah. Like I became really aware of the people that I loved and would say, that's not right. How are you going to rephrase that? And then they started doing that for me. And it was all just these little tweaks and changes, yeah, that all, yeah, supported this bigger shift. So for those of you listening, this doesn't mean you need to go and, like, I don't know, quit your job and spend the next 5 years reprogramming your mindset, yeah, although that would be, yeah, a cool thing to do. You can do really small tweaks in the day once you start to grow in that consciousness and that awareness,
yeah,
and starting to look at what your beliefs are and go through that kind of process that Megan's, yeah, sharing.
Yeah, and take little actions, right? I mean, we all know that taking those little actions mean a lot and it feels good. It feels, yeah, good, right? Yeah.
Oh, it does. I was listening to a podcast the other day and they were sharing a really quick snippet of talking about when, you know, you're sort of spiraling or feeling stuck or like, you know, the world's ending and whatever, you know, you're in a negative headspace.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were like, just start saying, it's a really simple thing. She was like, just an exercise of saying out loud what you do know, what, you know, so I know. And I was like, well, that's super simple, but that's actually really profound. So then I was spiraling off in my head about goodness knows what. And so I just started to say out loud on a walk in a field where no one else was. I was like, you know, I know I'm held. I know I'm loved. I know I'm safe. I know, you know, just literally, I think I probably only spent a minute just saying the things I know about my life and about myself. And I totally, it totally shifted things for me. And then I could carry on my nice little walk, chat to the cows, came home, and I didn't spiral off into the doom, the doomful place that I know so well.
Exactly. Exactly. It doesn't have to be major. It's very little. It's little things.
It is little.
You know, it's funny, even with exercise, you're talking about going out with the cows. I don't really like doing, say, for example, the gym or any of those kind of exercises. Like, I hate the gym. And I just kind of realized, you know, anything where I don't know I'm exercising is the best route for me. Right. Yeah. So team sports always worked for me because it was kind of like socializing, but you're on a field or something. And then now that I have my dog, it's like, you know, it's just about being with my dog out in nature. So it doesn't, you know, it doesn't really have to be complicated, these things. It can be simple. It's just, So yeah. And our brains are like plasticine. Neuroplasticity is, you know, what they're talking about. And we're learning so much about the mind.
Yeah.
So this is those little steps and those reframes are what changes those neural pathways, right? So it's really interesting. And I think that's, I think that's great advice, what you just said.
No. And so where could people listening find out more about you, Megan? Where is your home online?
My home online is my name, Megan O'Neill. So it's the traditional Irish way, O-N-E-I-L-L.ca, because I'm in Canada.
Yep.
So that's the easy way. And, you know, I attach core beliefs to everything in terms of my social media. So Megan Core Beliefs in Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, people just go Megan Core Beliefs. So it's easy.
Oh, brilliant. That is easy. So everyone listening, if you need some inspiration and help with this on Instagram or Facebook or wherever you hang out most, make sure you go and follow Megan, because the more, it's so helpful to have people and influences that are positive and are helpful and just, you know, just small messages in the day that can make a really big difference with that. And for those of you that want to know those links, I'll put them all in the show notes where you can link to all of Megan's stuff and you can follow her there. But thank you so much, Megan.
Thank
I found
you.
This really helpful.
Me too. I love this. This was great.
Fabulous. And for those of you listening, make sure you go and say hello to Megan on some form of social media. Otherwise, I will see you next week for another Gut Goddess show episode. Bye. I'll just check.